David Jason. Black and white images of a deserted street fade as Inspector Frost's frowning face comes into focus. A touch of frost. The barrel of a gun. A body lies lifeless. Based on the characters created by R.D. Wingfield. Frost stands behind the metal gate of a jail. He slowly smiles. A viewfinder pans over an industrial estate and zooms in on a car park. Through a camera, an officer watches as men carry a covered box into a warehouse.
It's Berland. Right on time.
A blue van with Berland car and van hire pulls up.
That's his van.
Another box.
With a star attraction by the sounds of it. How long should we give them?
Let them start. 10 minutes.
Right.
Frost crosses over to a window. Below, police officers are gathered.
Right, George. Give them 10.
Down on the ground, George, a grey-haired man, sticks his thumb up. The officers assemble. Inside the warehouse, a blanket is taken off the covered box to reveal a cage with a dog inside. If Dogs Run Free, Part 1. A man draws a chalk line across a wooden enclosure. Another sets up a video camera. Outside, Frost hurries to the officers.
Okay, George, get ready. Wait for my signal, all right?
Yeah, well, he's won 4 fights. One more, he's a grand champion. Neil!
Coming!
How much are you betting on him, Dad?
I don't know.
Sorry.
Well, if I miss getting a bet on because Neil's made us late, you'll be paying me back long after your shot of that student loan. Let's go!
The man in his 40s with sandy-coloured hair climbs into the back of a Range Rover. The teenage boys follow. The Range Rover swerves onto a residential street. A white van drives under an archway on the industrial estate and into the car park. Frost parks the van by a group of men who are chatting. Frost rips a red cable from underneath the steering wheel. He tries the ignition. He frowns and looks over to the men.
You couldn't give us a push, could you, lad?
They ignore him.
All right, never mind, I'll just call the AA.
The men glance at each other and wander over.
It's your lucky day, mate.
All right, cheers.
Frost looks anxious as the men walk to the back of the van. The black Range Rover travels along a road packed with people. The sandy-haired man frowns and shakes his head.
Come on, shift your sergeant.
At the estate, the men push Frost's van. Frost drums his finger on the steering wheel.
Put it in gear! What are you doing up there? Now, you idiot!
Frost slams the brake down, the men stumble. 4 uniformed officers leap from the van and grab the 2 men, bundling them into the back. Frost casually climbs from his seat.
Get down.
Appreciate it.
Stay down.
Right, George, let's go.
The fleet of police cars and vans move off, followed by an RSPCA van. Inside the warehouse, men are gathered around the enclosure, drinking and shouting. One man scribbles on a blackboard. The police cars and vans join Frost in the car park. Dozens of officers rush into the warehouse.
Go.
2 cages by the door have dogs in them. Frost ushers the RSPCA woman in.
Okay, come on.
By the enclosure, the men scatter as the police burst in. More officers run and grab the spectators. Frost pauses at the door, watching with a frown on his face as the men are led out by the police. The RSPCA woman waits beside him. They head towards the enclosure.
George?
Yep.
Where's Berlin?
No, not here.
A pit bull terrier lies on the ground. An officer restrains another dog on a leash. It's covered in blood. In the Range Rover, the sandy-haired man passes money to the boy sitting in the back.
Here you go, Neil.
Oh, there's no need, Mr. Berlin.
No, you're all right. It's the sport that counts, but, you know, it's nice to spice it up a bit.
The 2 boys grin. Back at the warehouse.
Berland couldn't have got out.
This was the van that he was in earlier this morning. It had to be him.
The Range Rover turns under the archway and stops.
Gov! What?
George points to the stationary car. Frost peers over. The sandy-haired man glares back. The boy's eyes are wide. Frost sinks his hands into his pockets.
Well, boys, they say it's much better to be born lucky than to be born rich.
What are we going to do?
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm going home for a pipe.
You can always take him in, Jack.
Frost watches as the Range Rover reverses.
Bring him in tomorrow.
The man and teenage boys are in a grand kitchen.
Cheers, boys.
Cheers.
You brought us luck, Neil. It was for you being late.
Yeah, good on you, mate.
A woman sits staring into the distance.
I've lost my grand champion, though.
Can't you get him back?
You ever think my son was a bit of an idiot?
Oh, officer, I know nothing about dog fighting. What are these dogs doing in the van? Oh, I seem to be here with a collar and lead.
What about the police, though?
Well, Inspector Frost will probably make a visit, but he knows nobody's going to finger me.
The woman glares.
Don't worry about your mum and dad, Neil. Nobody knows where you were. It's all about a pizza, right?
Oh, I've got to go.
All right.
Give me a call tomorrow.
Yeah.
Night, Neil.
Night.
Night, night. So, who knew?
What?
The place was clean. Who knew?
The woman walks away.
Dad, Brian knows better than that.
Yeah, well, I hope so, but it's funny that's the first name comes into your head, too. I think we'll have to have a word with him.
Well, I don't even talk to him now.
Hmm. There's a lot of people who trust me are banged up in Denton Nick right now. I've lost faith. If it's about some snotty-nosed kid, we'll have to teach him a lesson, right?
Yeah, okay.
The boy leaves his bottle of beer on the countertop and strolls out, leaving the man and woman alone. They face away from each other.
It's not Sean's fault.
Don't interfere, Sally. It's none of your business.
He grabs the bottles of beer and goes. Night. A car travels along a deserted road surrounded by parkland. A bike passes in the opposite direction. A lorry speeds along an overpass. Below, the bike follows the path under the overpass and screeches to a stop. A hooded figure jumps off the bike and dumps it in the bushes. He waits in the undergrowth. A couple approach.
She's all right now.
The figure watches the couple as they head through the subway. At the station...
Window, come on!
Another one!
Get out!
Thanks,
Jack.
Get out! Jack, £5,670.56, €709.
Very cosmopolitan. Perhaps you ought to have a national team, eh? You know, fun for all the family. All right, lock the money up. It's going to be a long night for you. All right, come on, out of the way. Chop, chop. Don't see the rabbit.
A few cars travel along the overpass. A man wanders along the path and through the subway, walking his dog. A young woman approaches the subway. She carries an umbrella and a handbag. The hooded figure rises from the bushes as she turns into the subway. She walks hesitantly through the graffiti-strewn underpass, folding up her umbrella. The bike stops at the subway entrance behind her. She glances back and carries on walking. The bike approaches. She turns nervously. The figure produces a crowbar. The woman runs. The figure gains on her and lifts the crowbar. He knocks her to the ground and skids to a stop. He walks over to the motionless body. He grabs a handbag and umbrella and cycles off. Day. Frost drives along a quiet road. An orange digger sits in the distance. He pulls up and parks. Frost gets out of his car and wanders into the RSPCA building by the side of the road. Inside, the RSPCA lady kneels by a kennel.
Good morning.
So, what's the score, Jack?
Well, I got 23 prosecutions, maybe. Every one of the punters, you know, stumbled on the fight by chance. Nobody's ever been to a dogfight before. Nobody organised it, nobody refereed it, and certainly nobody owns any of the dogs.
Well, my score's a kennel full of healthy dogs that know only one thing, fighting and killing. They can never be trusted with people. Brian, you better go. I don't want the blame if you're late for school.
See you later, Mrs. Moorhead.
The teenage boy puts down a broom and waves. Mrs. Moorhead and Frost go inside.
All that work, and they walk away with £100 fines.
Well, some of them have got form, so I hope we can do better than that. But we missed Burland. I was hoping for a custodial sentence by now, but that's gone. I'm sorry.
Me too. Or maybe I shouldn't be. I have to wait a long time for resources like that from the police, Jack. If you haven't wanted Berman for other reasons.
Well, I can't get him for money laundering. I can't get him for drugs. Keeps his nose clean in Denton. He's like a disease. He's infectious.
If you can't find any other way to get him, Burland will organise more fights. People like him really believe that animals tearing each other to pieces is like going to a premiership match, only better.
She locks a cupboard.
So, our interests coincide.
Frost nods gravely.
Graham, Helen, we better put these dogs down now.
Frost watches as the vets follow Mrs. Moorhead out. Pupils wander into Oak Tree High School. Sean and Neil wander along in their maroon school uniforms.
You don't think the police are going to want to talk to us, do you?
Neil, my dad can handle the police.
Mum and dad are go berserk.
So what?
There he is.
Had to be him.
What do you mean?
He came to a dogfight with us 2 months ago. Same place, he walked out. And there's a volunteer down at the RSPCA. And there was an RSPCA woman there yesterday.
Right? Come on, Brian's a pillock, but he's not going to risk saying anything.
Look, my dad said someone did. Who else?
Sean glares at Brian, who's chatting to a girl. Sean mimes pulling the trigger on a gun. Frost enters an interview room reading a sheet of paper. The sandy-haired man waits in the room, his arms folded. Frost glances up from the paper.
You're in this transit van, LX54NFD.
The lawyer looks at the picture.
Ownership's not disputed?
Well, it was used to transport dogs to a dogfight yesterday afternoon.
Inspector, you know perfectly well my client owns a van and car hire business.
Yes, well, I would like all the paperwork regarding the hire of this van that you were seen driving yesterday morning, Mr. Burland.
The lawyer rolls his eyes and scribbles.
And you've been found guilty on two previous occasions of crimes regarding dogfighting.
Burland looks at his watch.
And this van was used to transport dogs to a dogfight that you claim you knew nothing about. And yet you arrived on the location just after the first fight had started. And why were you there then, Mr. Burland?
My client was trying to circumvent the football traffic. Shortcut. On his way to buy some pizzas.
Must have been a glitch in the sat-nav, right? Quattro Stagioni's my favourite.
Berland meets Frost's angry glare.
What's yours?
Frost drives along in his car. Rain falls on the windscreen. He pulls up on the side of the road by a police car. Officers gather by the entrance to the underpass. Frost parks the car over the road from a row of terraced houses. He gets out. He looks around him and frowns. George is by the subway.
What's all this then, George?
Morning, Jack. A mugging down in the underpass last night. Very nasty. The woman's going to be all right, but she's in hospital.
Right.
He could have killed her. We got some tyre tracks, a mountain bike of some sort. If the bike's local, we might get a break there. We also found the woman's bag just dumped outside there.
Right.
It's with forensic now.
Very good.
But after all that, the cash was still there.
Go on.
They wander through the subway.
Nobody local with this sort of form, is it?
Nothing as violent as that, Jack, no.
I don't know why people still use places like this. I mean, they're not safe, are they?
His face falls.
I've been here before.
Yeah, too many times.
No, I don't mean like that. I mean exactly this place. It was a long time ago. A woman got mugged, and she was badly hurt.
Frost looks down on the floor, deep in thought. Students play cricket on the school pitch. Girls sit on a nearby hill watching. Sean and Neil wander over.
Mate, he's not going to admit it.
Yeah, so what? He needs a smacking. How's it going, Brian?
What's your problem, Sean?
You broken up any dogfights lately?
Brian glances at them, then goes back to his cricket game. Frost watches a video of the dogfight.
So, when you get fed up with football, you get a few mates around, a crate of beer, and you watch a dog fight.
Graying Superintendent Mullet frowns at the video, sighing. He turns it off.
There'll be another day.
Mullet looks thoughtful.
I don't like Berland living on our patch either. We know he's heavily involved in drugs, but there's no evidence he's up to anything in Denton or the county. There's a limit to how much time we can devote to him.
Well, he's trouble. And sooner or later, he's going to be our trouble. The Met have got him down for 3 murders. He may not have pulled the trigger, but he signed the checks.
Mullet bites his lip.
He has an irritating and clever solicitor. Mr. Salmon has submitted a file of harassment complaints. More won't help.
Sean comes out of his large house, pulling his coat around his neck. A blue car pulls up on a drive. A woman waves as she works in the front garden. Sean pushes his way through the hedge from next door as Neil comes out of his house.
Hey, mate. What have you been doing?
Homework.
You're weird, mate. Anybody would think you like doing it.
I do. That's how weird I am.
All right, boys.
Hi, Dad.
See ya.
Bye, darling.
See you later.
So I followed Brian after school.
Now he's weird.
He's at the RSPCA.
So?
Oh. Thought we'd go and see him.
Sean puts on a black glove.
You still here?
I'm off in a minute.
Well, I won't be that long, Brian. I can give you a lift home.
It's OK, Mrs. Moorhead. I'm heading to the library anyway.
A vet anatomy book.
You know, most vets would be struggling with this after a couple of years at college. I'd be struggling now.
It's good to know a bit about what the vets are doing.
The station archives.
Well, I got a few muggings or attempted muggings in that area over the last 2 years. Nothing violent, not in the underpass, nothing using a bicycle.
No, it was a lot longer than 2 years. Anyway, I'm not trying to find a connection. It's just nagging me, you know. It's the same crime in the same place, and a bike and a handbag we found with money still in it.
Hmm. When you say a long time?
Yeah, it must be, well, I don't know, 20 years or more.
Oh, that's a long time between muggings.
Yeah, I know. It's just annoying me that my brain isn't working as it used to. Whereas yours is still like a well-oiled machine. But if you can't remember, well...
What?
You know, can't is not a word in Mr. Trigg's vocabulary, Inspector.
No, but the thing is, Jennifer, if you want to get the best service out of him, you have to wind him up.
You'd get an even better one if he gave me more information than Muggins and 20 years.
Well, now we've got Jenny here, she is going to download the entire contents of your brain cell onto a floppy disk, and then we can access anything at any time at all.
Computerization is just a tool, Jack. That's all. Only works if the right person's using it.
And that means not me?
No, I didn't say that. Did I say that?
All right. Let's see who comes up with it first.
No, it's not a game.
I'm up to 1992.
You've got enough to do, Jenny. If Inspector Frost wants this information because he can't remember it himself, I will endeavour to find it for him.
All right, come on, off you go. Chop, chop.
Frost hurries out. Brian leaves the RSPCA centre. He rummages around in his bag as he descends the steps, unaware of Sean and Neil approaching.
How's the RSPCA cab, Brian? You had a good old chat with her.
You're nuts.
My dad's not pleased.
Good. That's made my day.
Sean blocks his path.
You little shit.
You shouldn't have done it.
I haven't got the guts. But whoever did, I'd shake his hand.
Sean pounces.
Get off! Eric, do anything! Hit him, Neil. Hit him!
He does. Brian falls to the floor and Sean kicks him.
Get off me!
Christine Moorhead hears the fight from inside. She puts down her notebook and looks out the window to see the boys on Brian. She grabs her keys and mobile. Outside, Brian elbows Sean in the face and runs. The boys chase after him. Christine rushes outside.
Leave him!
The boys disappear down the road. Christine grabs Brian's bag, which is lying on the ground, and runs to a car. The boys chase Brian down a street. Brian goes through a heavy wooden gate along a track. Christine pulls up by the gate, hesitates, then drives off. The boys continue along the track and into a wasteland. There are huge piles of rocks and dirt. The boys chase Brian, a few metres behind. Christine's car pulls off on the wasteland. Dust rises from underneath the car tyres. A train passes along a track. The boys run towards it. Brian slows down, and Sean pushes him onto the floor.
Come on, Brian! Just say it! Come on! Just admit it! Come on! Come on!
Brian pushes Sean off. He and Neil struggle on the ground. Sean pulls out a knife. Neil pushes Brian away and into Sean. Brian falls to the floor. Sean and Neil stare.
Leave him! Leave him alone!
Sean drops the knife and the boys flee as Christine comes running. Brian's shirt is stained with blood.
Brian, you all right? Oh, my God.
She takes out her phone. Later, Christine sits alone in a dark hospital corridor. Frost slowly walks towards her. She looks up at him expectantly. She leans her head against the wall.
I knew he wouldn't make it. If I'd been quicker, I thought I was stopping a fight, that's all.
Frost looks down the corridor to where Brian's parents are being ushered into a room.
I've got two children. Not much younger than Brian. Same school. I offered him a lift. Why didn't he take it?
She shakes her head.
He just wanted to go to the library. That's all.
She holds a tissue to her face.
Did you know either of the boys who attacked him?
She shakes her head.
No, I don't think so.
Would you recognise them?
Christine takes a deep breath and bites her lip. She nods.
Yes.
Frost nods, clenching his jaw. Berlin bursts home. Sally rushes down the wooden stairs.
When did it happen?
A couple of hours ago. It's hard to get the story out of him. He was upstairs when I got in.
Was he in a fight?
It's not about a fight. Listen to me, Jerry. It's on the radio. A boy was stabbed and he's dead.
Berlin freezes. He slowly closes his eyes and sighs. He looks at Sally. They slowly climb the stairs. In Sean's room, Berlin puts his hand on his son's shoulder.
I wanted to teach him a lesson. If he'd just taken it.
I know, it got out of hand. That's what happens when you have a knife. I mean, what were you thinking of?
But he pissed on us, Dad, didn't he?
I won't let you go down for this, son, all right?
No. No, we've got to deal with this properly.
Oh, my God, the police are going to come.
Yes, well, maybe they will and maybe they won't. But if they do, you weren't there, Sean, right?
You can't say that.
Shut up, Sally.
He didn't mean to do it. We've got to tell the truth. I think we should call the police.
Look, Sally, some little shit is dead and he shouldn't be, right? What matters now is that our son walks away from this without ruining his life. He wasn't there. That's what he says. That's what Neil says.
It's a mistake. A mistake for Sean.
It's what friends are for, son, yeah? And you will find there's no shortage of people willing to swear that you were somewhere else.
Berlin glances at Sally standing by the door and puts his arm around Sean. Sally blinks back tears. She walks out. An area is cordoned off by the train track.
George, what do you got?
Get your knife. You get one of these pretty well anywhere.
Any fingerprints?
Well, the first glance from forensics says it's clean. But they hope to do better down the lab, prints or DNA.
Any more witnesses?
Yeah, sighting of two youths seen running across the bypass. But that was about 10 minutes after Mrs. Moorhead got here. It's all very vague, Jack.
What about the camera outside the RSPCA building?
Ah, pointing the wrong way.
Right. But why? Why? Who were they?
It could have been a random attack. Or they could have been waiting for him.
Well, Christine says that she would recognise them. Also, they were familiar to her. Now, if that's the case, it means that Brian Shanklin probably knew his attackers.
Neil sits with Berland.
I didn't know Sean had a knife.
Berland nods.
Have you said anything to your mum and dad yet, Neil?
No, they're not back.
Okay, here's what you do. You go upstairs, you get out of those clothes, you give them to me, and then you get in the bath and you wash yourself. You wash yourself to within an inch of your life, do you understand?
Neil stares.
You and Sean were at my garage cleaning cars. That's the story, and I've got witnesses to corroborate it.
Why did he have to take a knife?
I don't know, Neil. Don't know. But neither you nor Sean are going down for this.
He tilts his head towards the house.
Close. Bath. Neil, get on with it.
Neil gets up. He starts to walk towards the house, then stops.
What about the woman?
What woman?
The RSPCA inspector. She saw us.
Berlin stares. At the station.
I've just been to see Brian Shanklin's parents.
Oh, yeah?
It seems like a boy who's never in any trouble. There's no hint of gangs or drugs or violence.
Yeah, well, parents don't know everything, sir. I reckon those boys were waiting for him.
It frightens me, Jack.
Hmm?
I won't pretend it doesn't. At times like this, you're fortunate you don't have any children or grandchildren.
Oh, well, there's always an upside to every downside, isn't there, so they say?
Mullet looks uncomfortable.
Here, I'll carry on.
Frost smiles.
We've got it!
Oh, don't give it to me.
No, the underpass.
Frost wanders into Trigg's office.
Yeah, you see, it was 1989.
Just a minute. First things first. Who got there first, Jenny or Trigg?
Well, I'd been working on that year a couple of weeks ago, so it was already scanned in. There wasn't much in it, was there, Mr. Trigg?
A woman was attacked in the same underpass on the 21st of May, 1989. A handbag was taken, recovered with the money still in it. We assumed the attacker just dropped it. He used a bike as well. Very similar.
Oh, yeah. I remember. We thought it was a mugging, but we got it wrong. Well, I got it wrong. The motive wasn't theft. It was a violent attack on a woman. And his name was...
Joseph David Formby.
Yes, because we pulled him in for another attack 2 years later.
1992.
Yes, well, the woman was lucky to be alive, but not before he'd attacked and killed another woman in Croydon, is that right?
Yes, but we got him in the end.
You got him in the end? That's no consolation to a dead woman. Anyway, what happened to Formby?
Died in Wormwood Scrubs 4 years ago.
A coincidence.
A coincidence. Coincidences make me uncomfortable. But not as uncomfortable as remembering a mistake that cost a woman her life. Anyway, thanks. So that's Jennifer 1, Trigg 0.
Trigg pulls a face. Frost peeks back around the door.
That's a very close result.
At home, Neil sits at the dinner table with his parents, Carolyn and Tom.
Sweetheart? Something's happened.
This is quite difficult, Neil. It's about Brian Shanklin.
Yeah, I know. He's dead.
Why did you say anything?
Not much to say, is there?
Somebody stabbed him, Neil.
Yeah, I know.
Well, school is closed for lessons tomorrow. But there's counsellors if you want to go. I don't know if you want to be with your friends or just stay here.
There's no point talking about it, is there?
You might need to. People deal with grief in different ways.
Well, I don't have much to do with them these days, so I'll just stay at home.
What about your dinner?
Neil ignores her and goes to his room. Carolyn hands Tom a plate of food.
Is that shock or just so what?
They glance at each other. Later, Neil's reading on his bed. Caroline comes in and closes the door behind her.
Is Sean going in?
Neil shrugs.
Why don't you give him a text?
She smiles brightly and walks over to the bed.
I've been talking to Dad and... we both think that there's something to be said for being with your friends.
She pats his leg and he pulls away.
Sean can do what he likes.
Neil sits at his desk.
Well, if you want to talk, I'm sure we won't get much sleep.
Neil scribbles at his homework, ignoring her. Carolyn looks back from the door and then goes. Neil's phone buzzes on the tabletop. It's Sean.
What do you want?
You all right?
Sean stands by his bedroom window looking over to Neil's house.
Say something, Neil.
How about... don't worry about a thing. Every little thing is going to be all right. Your dad was probably into Bob Marley.
Look, if I could go back and make it not happen, I'd do anything.
If I could change anything, I'd like to arrange for you to be dead instead of Brian. If only.
Neil glares back at Sean through the window, then turns off the light. Sean looks at the dark room. He chucks down his phone and sits on his bed. He buries his head in his hands. Daytime. Students slowly walk up to the school. Flowers have been left by the gates. Frost's car pulls up into the car park. He stops and looks around the school entrance. One girl comforts another as they look at a pile of flowers by the door. At home, Berlin sits in the kitchen staring at a newspaper. He's dressed in a suit. Sally leans against the countertop, holding a cup of coffee. Sally stares at Berlin with a look of hatred. Berlin gulps his coffee, then stands agitated.
Jerry, can we please talk?
No.
We can't just lie our way out of this. It's more important than that.
Not another word.
He points his finger at her, glares, and leaves. Frost stands by the school door.
Ah, Jack.
Ah, George. Listen, I don't want the attack in the underpass to be forgotten about in the middle of all of this, right?
The uniforms are still on it.
Yeah, okay.
I think I've got something. A friend of Brian's, a Paul Timms. You need to speak to him.
All right.
They head into the school. Neil's in his room.
Have you got your black trousers? They're not in the dirty washing. Neil, it's not a big deal. I'm just trying to do your washing. Neil!
They're around. How do I know where? Maybe trousers aren't the only thing I've got on my mind.
He turns back to his homework. Carolyn hesitates, then leaves.
Do you clock that smell? Exactly the same smell as my old school. I don't know what it is, George, but when we were at school, we managed without our mates getting knifed.
At home, Sally creeps into Sean's room. He's asleep. She perches on his bed.
Sean, I don't think your dad is right. But I can't make him listen on my own.
Sean doesn't stir. She tentatively reaches across and rests her hand on his shoulder. She looks at him sadly, then gets up and slowly walks out. Sean opens his eyes. She closes the door behind her. Sean opens his bedside table drawer. He takes out a pencil case and pulls out a small piece of silver foil. He unwraps it and puts a tablet in his mouth. At the school...
He said someone threatened him.
I don't know if it was a threat exactly. Brian had fallen out with two of his mates. He never said why, really. Then, suddenly, they got quite nasty with him.
And this was yesterday?
I saw them having a go at him when we were playing cricket. Just verbal, nothing much. Nothing heavy. But I know he was worried. He said it was to do with dog fighting.
Dog fighting? Is that a normal topic of conversation at this school?
No. I didn't know what he was on about. It just sounded weird to me.
What are the names of these two mates?
Paul looks down. Frost frowns.
I need to know their names, Paul.
Paul looks apologetic. Frost smiles, then his face drops.
Who were they?
Paul sighs.
Neil Viner and Sean Burland.
Frost looks surprised.
All right, thank you very much, Paul. You may go now.
Paul looks down sadly and leaves. A teacher escorts him out.
That is who I think it is.
Yes. Jerry Burland's son.
A police car pulls up on the Burlands' drive. One is parked next door at the Viners.
Viner, I'm taking him to Denton Police Station to help with inquiries into the death of Brian Shanklin.
Well, how can Neil help you? He doesn't know anything about it. He can't.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Viner.
Carolyn clutches her face as they usher Neil into the car. She watches them go. Tom follows in his car. Next door, Sean is led out of his house by two officers. Sally runs out on her mobile. Carolyn watches.
Don't worry, Sean, we'll be there as soon as I get hold of Dad. Get off the bloody phone, Jerry, and answer me. They've taken Sean away. What's happening? They're talking about Brian Shanklin as if Neil's got something to do with
him. When Jerry gets my message, he'll have him home.
It's a mistake. A terrible... It's a mistake.
Yes, it is. Come on.
Frost and Christine come out of Christine's house.
When did Brian come and work for you as a volunteer?
2 months ago, nearly three. He turned up in reception one day to ask if he could help, just cleaning out kennels, whatever. I should speak to his parents. I can't imagine how they... No, I can. That's what makes it so unbearable.
It would be better if you didn't talk to anyone. I mean, now there's a witness. It's best you don't get emotionally involved.
I am emotionally involved. I was there.
Christine, if you're going to identify these killers, it's going to be a long and difficult journey. And what matters most is your objectivity in court.
I don't feel very objective.
No. No. Neither do I.
They get into the car. At Denton Police Station.
Thank you. All right, George.
Mrs. Moorhead.
Sergeant.
I want you to look at the glass. And soon, in a minute, you'll see a group of young men. Now, if you recognise any of them, please point them out. But I don't want you to feel that you're under pressure to identify them. If you're unsure, just say so. And if none of the people resemble those that you saw, that's also fine. OK? All right, light.
Christine, Frost and George look through the glass as a row of boys line up on the other side. Frost glances at Christine. Neil and Sean are in the lineup.
You recognise one?
Two. They're both there.
How sure are you that the two lads you recognise are the ones that attacked Brian?
Christine sighs.
On a scale of 1 to 10. 10.
Thank you. All right, George.
At home, Sally pours two glasses of wine.
From the moment we spoke to Neil about Brian, there's been something wrong. I don't know how he was supposed to react, but the way he did wasn't right. It's not just a mistake, is it?
If my husband says it's a mistake, it is. Haven't you got that yet?
What are you talking about?
The truth, as decided by Jerry.
Carolyn's face crumples.
They were there. Neil and Sean. What happened?
It doesn't matter what happened.
Sally looks away.
I've lived in Jerry's world for a long time. And now we're all in it, Carolyn. And we do what he says.
Carolyn stares wide-eyed. Christine signs her witness statement.
Yes, that's everything. That's what happened. That's what I saw.
Right, thank you. Now, have you seen either of these lads before? I mean, before you saw them attacking Brian Shanklin, I mean.
They do seem familiar. I could have seen them. I don't know them, if that's what you mean.
Well, it's just they both went to Brian's school, which is the same school your children go to.
Christine looks irritated.
I know what you're suggesting, but I'm not confused about maybe seeing them at the school. Those were the boys who killed Brian Shanklin.
All right. Good, thank you. Well, you'll have to know eventually, so you might as well know now. The first youth that you identified was Sean Burland, Jerry Burland's son.
So, what are you saying?
Well, I'm partly guessing, of course, but from what I learned from the school, it seems that Brian went to a dogfight with Sean and the other lad some months ago when they were all friends. But Brian was so disgusted by what he saw that he ended the friendship.
And came to me to volunteer.
Mm-hmm. Now, it seems that either Sean or his father thought that Brian was the one who tipped us off.
No. No, surely not.
Her face falls.
What have I done?
No, it's not what you've done. You didn't know any of this at all.
I'm part of it. My actions. We did the right thing, but you're telling me because of that, Brian is dead.
No, look, you can't think like that.
Tom, in a grey suit, jogs out of Denton Police Station's visitor car park and out into the street. Berlin runs towards him, waving his arms.
It's under control, Tom.
What?
My solicitor's in there. He knows what he's doing. He can handle it.
Neil didn't have anything to do with what happened to that boy. He doesn't need a solicitor.
It won't cost you, Tom.
What do you mean, cost me?
Look, it's all sorted, all right? In the meantime, just do what any good solicitor will tell you and just say nothing. Just go home, Tom.
Tom frowns and jogs to the station.
I'll call Ryan and see you and Carolyn later.
Berland trudges up the road. In the interview room, Frost with Sean.
You have my client's statement. It records everything he did yesterday afternoon in detail. It tells you exactly where he was. It also gives you the names of people who saw him and can vouch for him.
Mm. They all knew his father, Jerry Berland, right?
Well, since he was cleaning vans at his father's garage, that really shouldn't come as a surprise, Inspector.
Frost leans forward and looks at the file.
Half the people in this statement have got criminal records as long as your arm.
Mr. Berland is a man who believes in giving people a second chance. Anything wrong with that?
There's a lot wrong with this statement. The speed it was produced, for a start.
Well, I can say the same about the speed in which you put my clients in front of an identity parade. I will be saying it too.
Frost pushes the statement away.
I don't believe any of it. And you know why? Because I have a witness who saw you and Neil at the same place where Brian Shanklin was stabbed.
Frost points at the nervous Sean and leans forward.
Because that's where you were, Sean. Weren't you?
A finger pushes the tape recorder switch on. Neil's now up before Frost. He sits there looking down.
Got anything to say?
The lawyer, Salmon, glances at Neil.
Mr. Viner is shaking his head.
What about the argument you and Sean had with Brian at the school?
I didn't have any argument.
Frost raises his eyebrows.
Did you speak to Brian Shanklin?
Why would I? He wasn't a mate.
Did you hear Sean threaten him?
No.
Frost frowns and glances at the file.
Ever been to a dogfight?
Inspector, we've already established where both my clients were yesterday. If you need clarification, they will assist. If you're proposing a fishing expedition, I will advise them to only answer questions that directly relate to the reason you brought them here.
What I propose, Mr. Salmon, is an investigation into the murder of Brian Shanklin, in which your two clients were at the scene of the crime. Now, I need answers to all the questions I ask, no matter how long it takes.
A hooded figure sits in a car across the road from Frost's house, watching Frost as he gets out of his car. Frost, in a brown Mac and Trilby, fiddles with the lock on the white front door of his modest semi-detached house. He enters. The hooded figure observes before stepping out of the car. He's wearing black Converse plimsolls and grey camo trousers. An implement sticks out from the pocket on his leg as he strides towards Frost's house. The implement is revealed to be a knife as the figure pulls it out and slashes the tires of Frost's blue Ford. Elsewhere, Christine leaves the RSPCA office. She trots down a small flight of steps and sees a black Range Rover parked by the road. She looks at it as she unlocks her own car. Berlin steps out in a black suit and blue tie.
Lovely day, Mrs. Moorhead. Mine's not been great. But then you'd know all about that, wouldn't you?
What do you want, Mr. Berland?
Well, we've got a lot more than animals on our minds, haven't we?
Why did it happen?
Why did what happen?
You know Brian Shanklin is dead. I don't think you'd be here unless you knew something about who killed him.
I know absolutely nothing about Brian Shanklin. All I know is it's got nothing to do with my son.
You think I'm happy about what this could mean for your son and his friend? I'm not, Mr. Berland.
Save it for your cats and your canaries.
This isn't something we can argue about.
Look, Neil and Sean are innocent.
You shouldn't be here.
What good does it do you banging up my son? Unless it's for revenge on me.
What do you think I am?
Shaken, she climbs into a car. Berlin steps forward.
I've always admired the way animals fight to protect their young. Whatever it takes.
He slams the car door shut on Christine, who flinches. Frost's house. The hooded figure creeps through the foliage around the shed in the backyard and observes Frost, who is in the kitchen. Inside, Frost reads a file. He fishes his phone out his pocket.
Frost. Christine. What? When? No, you stay there. I'm coming over. No, it's all right, no, I'm on my way.
Frost storms through the hallway, grabs his jacket, and heads out the front door. He stops and furrows his brow as he notices the tires slashed on his car. He rushes back into the house. The kitchen window has been put through, and a brick lies on the floor amongst shards of glass. Frost goes to the shattered pane and looks out, frowning. A taxi races around a street corner and pulls up to Berlin's car dealership. Frost gets out the back.
How long, Mr. Frost?
I don't know, just wait.
It's your money.
Not if I can help it.
He storms into the modern reception area.
Good evening, sir.
Is Jerry still here?
Who shall I say?
Never mind, I'll find him myself.
You can't just barge in, sir.
Can't I? You just watch me.
Berlin jolts up from behind his desk.
Inspector Frost, always a pleasure, mia casa su casa.
I am so sorry, Mr. Berlin.
It's all right, Eleanor, just piss off.
Now, either your solicitor is not earning enough, Mr. Berlin, or you don't listen to what he says.
You know what I love about you? I never understand a word you're saying.
If you so much as say hello to Christine Moorhead, or even look at her, I will arrest you.
Sorry, that was stupid, but as a parent, you can imagine, of course, you're not. Right, but I just wanted to speak to her parent to parent, you know what I'm saying? Intimidation was never in my mind. She made a mistake.
I'm interested to know why you should think that Mrs. Moorhead is a witness.
Berlin's confused.
It's not a secret, is it?
If she was a witness, the only people who would know that would have been at the scene of the crime.
Frost walks out, leaving a worried Berlin. Christine and Frost at the RSPCA office.
You told me I'd be attacked in a court. You didn't tell me I'd be threatened. Well, bullies don't impress me much, but on top of everything...
Well, he won't go near you again.
Are there any other witnesses?
No.
I wish it wasn't just me. For all sorts of reasons. Still.
Look, we'll keep a close eye on you. We'll have patrol cars going past your house, beat officers as well. Berlin will know that. Oh, and there'll be me too. That'll put him off.
Thanks, Jack.
Frost smiles boyishly and walks towards the door. He stops and turns.
Have you eaten?
No.
Do you fancy an Indian?
Yeah, sure.
Good.
Frost grins and holds the door open.
Okay.
They exit. A man in a black leather jacket leans against a BMW parked by a wall with a mural on it. He smokes a cigarette. Berlin rolls up in his black Range Rover and winds down the window.
Good man, Marek. That difficulty with the RSPCA woman I told you about, it's just not working out. She's not getting the message.
Okay.
We may have to lean on her a bit harder, okay?
It's not a problem.
Good man.
He's arranged a solicitor for Neil, can you believe that? Not a word to me. I can't talk to my son, yet Jerry Berlin has got his solicitor in there with him.
Perhaps it's best.
Why? I don't believe this has anything to do with Neil.
Carolyn stops chopping vegetables and puts down the knife.
I can't find Neil's clothes. I know what he was wearing when he went out yesterday. I know what trousers he had on. They are not in the house. I know what shirt. I have looked everywhere.
You want to talk about washing?
I am talking about the fact that every piece of clothing our son was wearing yesterday afternoon has disappeared.
Tom looks concerned. An Indian restaurant with silver stars draped over the windows. Frost and Christine sit at a table.
You don't need to ask me why I do it, Jack. You know why already.
Do I?
Fluffy bunnies.
Yeah.
I work for the RSPCA because I'm a woman who simply adores fluffy bunnies.
No, sorry, don't do sarcasm.
I don't confuse animals with people. Animals fight and kill to survive. They're not vicious or perverted or cruel for fun or because they're too lazy to care.
So they need protection?
Well, aren't you out there? Because if you weren't, people would be even more unpleasant than they are.
Hmm. Yeah, well, there is that. Also, to give people directions when they get lost.
Yeah, once upon a time. Yeah, we know that how we treat animals is part of how we treat each other. Truth or dare?
What do you mean?
Why are you a policeman? And don't tell me it's because you couldn't think of anything else to do.
No, it was because of the uniform. But I looked so scruffy in it, they put me into CID.
Why?
I don't know why. It's just ever since I was about 14, it was something I wanted. I had no theories why it mattered. I just believed that it did.
And did it?
Well, on a good day. I seem to have spent most of my life with the worst things that people do to each other. I shouldn't be surprised by it, but I still am.
Exactly. Well, that means it still matters.
Yeah. Well, it's just part of the job, that's all. But it is something to do with truth. You know, when bad things happen to people, that's the least that they deserve. Sometimes it's... that's all there is.
Christine tries not to smile.
No, you're laughing at me.
No. No, just when you said that, you looked, I don't know, younger.
Now you are laughing at me.
Frost smiles back at her as they look into each other's eyes. Christine drops her gaze.
Anyway, look, it's, you know, it's getting late, isn't it? I think I'll get the bill.
I didn't realise the time. Why don't I get this?
No, excuse me.
Well, next time I pay. Just get my coat.
Christine gets up. Tom leans against his kitchen counter.
The boys attacked Brian Shanklin because of you. You and dogfighting.
Oh, come on, Tom, you stopped wiping Neil's arse a long time ago. He's a clever lad. It's his business what he does.
You made Neil lie to the police. And you've come here to tell us that after your son knifes another boy, Neil has to keep lying to the police? We all do?
That's exactly right. If Sean was carrying a knife, then Neil was the boy who pushed Brian Shanklin onto it. That's what happened.
Tom and Carolyn look at each other in shock.
Well, I'm not taking it. Neil has to tell the truth. There's no choice.
Damn it, a good-looking lad like Neil going into prison. What about his place in Oxford? That's gone, isn't it? You understand what I'm saying, don't you?
Oh, I get the threat.
Good. Because you need to.
Tom and Carolyn look at each other in fear as Berlin strolls out of the kitchen. Christine, wearing a green barber jacket, walks her golden retriever across a village green. Berlin's man, Lizowski, pulls up in his black BMW and observes her menacingly. She lets herself in through a white picket gate and walks up to her front door.
Morning.
Mullet comes out of Denton police station and catches sight of Frost paying a taxi fare.
Ah! Just the man I want to see. Can I give you these, sir?
What do I want with these?
These are taxi receipts, sir.
Yeah, apparently somebody decided to stick a knife in a couple of my tyres last night, not to mention the brick through the kitchen window.
Well, that's terrible, Jack. Do you know who? Have you caught anyone?
No. No, a neighbour of mine saw someone running down the back alley behind his house but couldn't get a description. Anyway, uniform are on the case. Obviously, somebody that I upset some time ago. You know, there's a long list.
Well, you seem to be taking it very nonchalantly, Jack. If there's anything I can do to help.
Well, yes, there is, actually, sir. You could pay these taxi receipts. Thanks very much, sir.
Jack!
Sir?
I assume none of these taxis were of a personal nature?
Nothing I ever do is of a personal nature, sir.
Frost turns.
Oh, by the way, I'll let you have the bill for the kitchen window and the four new tyres later.
Frost quickly trots away. Christine's.
Are you sure you want to go to school today? I mean, there's no pressure on you. It's fine if you do, but if you just wanted to stay at home...
I don't know. I think we'd both like to see our friends for a bit.
Yeah, but I don't want to get into all the counselling stuff, though.
Well, see how it goes today. You can always finish this afternoon. Go to your dad's a day early. Have you spoken to him about Brian?
He'd already heard something on the news. He didn't believe it could be our school. Well, nobody can.
No. Well, I'll phone him. I'm sure he'll be able to get over and pick you up.
In the car.
Are you going to be all right?
Oh, yeah, I'll be fine. I've still got to talk to the police again. Best thing if I go into work, really. Not give myself time to think. I'll be fine, guys, really.
Sure you will.
Sophie smirks.
What's that supposed to mean?
The mysterious Inspector Frost.
What's mysterious about Jack?
Nothing.
Josh and Sophie both laugh. They pull up outside Oak Tree High School. Flowers have been hung on the fence. Students in maroon jumpers head in through the gates. Christine stops the car in the car park. Across the street, Lizowski hangs out the window of his BMW. He's taking photographs of Josh and Sophie as they get out the car. He looks up from the camera with beady eyes. Head in the police cell. The room is dimmed and he stares at the floor. He rushes over to the stainless steel toilet bowl and vomits. Another cell. Neil sits stoically on his bed, leaning against the wall with his eyes closed. An elderly warden unlocks the door and walks in.
Your parents are here.
Do I have to?
You don't have to, no.
The station canteen. Jenny's at the counter buying two coffees.
Morning.
Inspector Frost?
Mm?
Have you seen Mr. Trigg yet?
No. And unless he's matched Jerry Burland up with a dozen armed robberies, you can tell him he's missed me, or he will have done it about half an hour.
Well, it's about what happened at your house. He told me about it.
Why, does he know some cheap glaziers, or what?
Well, he's concerned. He remembered something very similar happening before.
Oh. All right. Come on. Who's his there?
Mr. Trigg.
Oh, all right. I'll drink it on the way. Thank you.
Oh.
16 years ago, there was a spate of attacks on our cars. I know because I was a serving officer at the time. I had my tyres shredded and a key run along both sides. I was only 6 months old and all.
Yeah, I remember. Mine was done at the same time.
Hmm. Had a brick through your kitchen window. Jenny, give me the cards. So, I put her onto this first thing. Half an hour and she had the lot.
You did give me the dates.
Hmm? Oh, yeah, I suppose I did.
You did, remember? When I was there.
Oi, 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 you two. I know we've got two people of exceptional talent in this office, but what is the relationship between punctured tyres and kitchen windows 16 years ago?
Because it's like the underpass. A crime that happened a long time ago. A crime that was never solved. Well, not for a long time. A crime that has happened exactly the same way now as it did then.
Frost thinks.
Yeah, well, a lot of coppers had their tyres done back then.
But only one had a brick through their kitchen window. That was you, Jack. You never liked too many coincidences. I think we've got too many here.
Frost looks concerned. Sean's bedroom, and Sally sits by the window staring out. Berland watches her through the door before pushing his way in.
He'll be home soon.
She stands up.
But for how long?
It'll be over. I promise.
She saw them, Jerry.
I don't think she's as sure as all that. I think she'll come to that conclusion herself.
Berlin walks out the room, leaving Sally anxious. The schoolyard and photographs of Josh as he walks with another boy. Lizowski looks up from the camera menacingly. Christine stares out of the RSPCA office window. In her RSPCA uniform, she turns around and sits on a swivel chair. She picks up her mobile phone and dials into it.
Jack, it's me. Everything's fine. Oh, not really. If you want that meal, come round. I know you're busy. I'm supposed to be, but... Anyway, give me a ring when you get this message.
Lizowski is still outside the school and is now taking pictures of Sophie as she walks across the playground. Carolyn wears white as she sits on the chair at Denton Police Station's waiting room. Tom paces with his hands in his suit pocket. Frost walks down the corridor and opens the door on them.
Inspector Frost?
Yes?
What's going to happen?
You've seen him?
Yes.
He will be charged.
Then will he come home?
I don't know. It's up to the court to decide whether they'll grant bail or not.
Are you going to oppose bail?
I don't know whether you think that lying is the best way to deal with this, or you're too stupid to realise that you'll make matters worse. Because you will.
An officer walks out the door behind him, and Frost turns and disappears back inside. Christine stands with a middle-aged man outside her house.
I just couldn't believe it when the kids phoned me last night. They must be in a state of shock.
We all are. They've been into school today, but I think getting away is going to be best. So if you could take them out a bit.
Why didn't I think of that?
Oh, all right, you know what I mean.
She sighs and looks down.
You all right?
Not exactly,
Alan. That was a stupid question, wasn't it? Sorry. I haven't got my head around this. Have I got this right? You knew the boys who did this?
No, I didn't know them, but I recognised them in the lineup.
You... Oh. Well, I bet that wasn't easy.
It wasn't.
Hi, guys.
You have a good time. Yeah, don't you worry about me.
See you later.
You sure, Mum?
I'll be fine.
Yeah.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Frost pulls up in his car.
Seatbelts!
Frowning, Alan eyes Frost as he rolls past. Christine smiles and walks up to the car as Alan drives off looking rather miffed.
That was very good timing, Jack.
Oh, was that Sophie and...
Joshua.
Joshua.
And the father. Oh, well, it'll give them something all to talk about.
In Alan's red Land Rover...
I don't know what you're so worried about, Sophie. Doesn't look like she's going to be on her own.
I think that was Inspector Frost.
That's what I meant.
What's this all about?
Well, he's not just a policeman. Mum's always going on about him.
Oh, gossip! Right, Sophie, you will tell all.
The kids were due to go to Alan on Friday anyway. Didn't seem much point sending them into school. Not with what's going on.
How old are they?
Josh is just 16. Sophie's 14. They didn't really know Brian, but you just don't know how something like this is affecting them.
Frost and Christine stand in her kitchen.
Where'd she live? Your ex, I mean.
Surrey. Just round the M25. Grim, isn't it? The ex. It's not where any of us think we'll end up. But it's been a long time. Over 10 years. It's okay. Eventually ran out of things to argue about.
And the kids? Oh, sorry. For a man who spends his life asking questions, I choose the wrong ones sometimes.
No. They're fine most of the time. You come to terms with the fact that the life you're asking them to live isn't the one they want. Excuse me.
Oh, sorry.
I don't like what we did to them. I've forgiven Alan most things, but... not such a bad question, after all. Right.
She hands Frost a tray of mackerel and salad.
Hope you like salad.
Oh, yeah, it's fine. It's nice, great, yeah.
So what don't you eat?
Well, anything that's green or does you good, basically.
Especially salad.
Yeah, well, I've never found a takeaway that does a good salad.
So what happened to your car?
Somebody thought that I didn't need tyres. Drunks, probably. Anyway, they got away pretty quick. Now I'm like everybody else. You know. Some things are not as high on the police's list of priorities as you'd like.
Well, that's not exactly reassuring.
But some things are. You are.
Lizowski sits in a small front room with a laptop of images of Josh and Sophie. A music video plays on a flat-screen TV in the background as he lights up a dubious-looking rollie. He picks up a print of one of the photographs of Joshua and cuts him out with a pair of large-handled scissors.
My mum and dad died a very long time ago now. They were Denton born and bred. Well, a bit like me. I think the furthest they ever went in their life was a day trip to Bournemouth.
You never wanted to leave?
No, well, I don't know, sometimes. I always used to think that no matter how far you go, you always meet the same people there.
Yeah, my mum died a long time ago too. She was living with us when Alan and I got married. She was in the early stages of Alzheimer's. It wasn't bad then, but when we knew Josh was on the way, we put her in a home. But I look back sometimes and wonder if Josh was more an excuse than a reason.
I don't believe that.
I've got nothing but admiration for people who deal with things like that.
Well, if you have to do it, you do.
Frost stares down.
My wife died at home.
You looked after her?
He nods.
That wasn't the real thing.
That's a terrible thing to say.
No. Things started to go wrong before she became ill. I was going to leave. The only reason I didn't is because she was dying.
Christine frowns.
You stayed. You didn't have to.
A pensive Frost raises his eyebrows and shakes his head.
Anyway, look, that was a great meal. But I must go because I'm on duty.
Yeah, me too.
Right. I've got a patrol car keeping an eye on the house and on the clinic. And you've got my telephone number should you need me. Mm. Right.
Right.
So, well, thank you once again.
Okay.
Well, we just seem to be getting into deep water. I don't know why.
Don't you?
She kisses him on the lips.
Oh, right. yeah, well, thanks. Right.
He straightens his tie and walks off, leaving Christine in the garden grinning. Early morning on a quiet canal, a runner sprints along the path by the water's edge. Hidden in the bushes is a figure, A bike moves in through the undergrowth. The silver bike is wheeled out. The hooded figure watches the man disappear. At the station, Frost opens a cell door flap. Neil is asleep on the bed. Frost continues down the corridor and peers into another cell. Sean is sitting on the floor, running his fingers through his hair. Mullet's office.
Now, we need a charge on the Brian Shanklin murder. I'm going to have to let those boys go if there isn't one.
All right, I'll charge them tomorrow.
Mrs. Moorhead is obviously a reliable witness, but the alibis are extensive. Any chance of a confession?
No, I'm afraid not. But when we get into court, I'm not so sure that Sean Burland will stand up to cross-examination. He's very shaky. But the other one, of course, he's as cool as a cucumber.
Someone must have said something.
Yeah, but the thing is, Burland has put the word about that if anyone says anything, they'll regret it. So there's nothing.
Mullet sighs.
I don't think that Neil's parents want to go along with it at all. They know the truth, but they're frightened of Burland.
He sailed very close to the wind, showing us he knows that Mrs. Moorhead is our only witness. But listening to rumours isn't a crime. That's all he'll admit to. We just can't get near him.
Mullet polishes the glass on his aquarium.
Under different circumstances, I'd let Mrs. Moorhead think about giving her evidence anonymously. Too late now.
Yeah, well, she's going to need extra protection.
Mullet looks up, then nods.
Burland hasn't been idle. Neither has his solicitor. Mr. Salmon has a complaint with the chief constable. You and Mrs. Moorhead.
Frost's eyes widen.
Saying what?
It paints you as an officer with an obsessive grudge and her as an animal rights lunatic who cares more about animals than people.
Ah, but no judge is going to listen to that, is he?
Take a jury that doesn't want to believe that two boys like their sons and grandsons killed another boy like their sons and grandsons. Witnesses swear the boys were cleaning vans. Tearful parents swear their boys are little angels. Confuse the truth with an alleged grudge. What have you got? Recipe for a jury that can't make up its mind.
Frost rolls his eyes and puffs out his cheeks with a heavy sigh. Night, down by the canal. A bike is wheeled along and propped up against a wall. The dark figure rummages in a saddlebag. He lifts out a ginger cat attached to a purple lead. He places the cat on the ground and ties the lead around a wooden post. A police car drives slowly along the quiet road outside the RSPCA building. A shadow stands at one lit window. Christine watches the car drive past. Back at the canal, the runner returns on the path along the river. Something catches his eyes and he stops running. He stares at the ginger cat, looks up and down the path, then bends down beside the cat. He tickles its chin, then reaches up to untie the lead. The figure approaches. He hits him over the head with a crowbar. The runner struggles to push the crowbar away, but the masked figure lashes out. The figure stands and then walks away. Morning, the runner lies lifeless on the ground, blood on his forehead. Frost stands over him, shaking his head.
All right, go on, take him away.
The body bag is zipped up. Frost wanders away from the canal towards the waiting ambulance. He pauses to let the ambulance crew pass with the body bag. Frost watches with a frown on his face. a group of officers.
What's up with you lot?
The ginger cat.
Moggy!
Come on, just get on with it.
The officers walk away with the ginger cat. At the morgue...
Yes, here we are. Philip Richard Headen, 42. Several injuries to the face and head, consistent with blows from a blunt instrument. Paint flex suggests tyre lever or crowbar, fairly new. Skull fractured in two places, there and underneath. Death resulted from hemorrhaging of blood and cerebral edema.
Any evidence of the attacker, you know, like blood or tissue?
There was blood under the fingernails, but not the victim's. So, all you have to do is find out who it belongs to. Oh, and there was hair on the clothing. Human and otherwise.
Otherwise? What do you mean by otherwise?
Felis sylvestris catus.
What's that mean when it's at home?
A cat.
Berlin's at home on the phone.
Don't go berserk, you know, we're just making a point. Give it an hour, it'll be empty by then.
Berlin hangs up and walks into his living room. He puts his hands on his hips, then pulls papers from a sideboard, scattering them on the carpet. He knocks flowers from the table, then opens a glass drinks cabinet and pushes the bottles onto the floor. His face full of concentration, he empties books from the cupboards. He strolls into the kitchen and unplugs the large flat-screen TV. Frost turns the lock to his house and steps into the dark hallway. He picks up his post and closes the front door. He turns the light on and flicks through the post. He takes off his checkered trilby. At home, Berlin strolls out of the garage with a flat-screen TV under his arm. He puts it in the back of his Range Rover. He takes a hammer from the garage, checks no one is around, and smashes a pane of glass in a door. Protecting his hand with a tea towel, he opens the door. He goes back to his car and gets in. He drives off down the dark street. At home, Frost has a drink in one hand and his mobile in the other. The TV is on. He dials at the RSPCA centre. Christine smiles.
Hello, Jack. No, I'm still here. Yeah, just about to finish and go home. You too. See you soon.
She smiles and hangs up. She turns back to her computer, sighing. At the Berlins.
So there's nothing missing from upstairs?
Doesn't look like it, does it? No, no, just the TV and the hi-fi from down here. First glance, kids, I reckon.
Oh, was there any money in the house?
Just a few quid in the kitchen drawer. What time did you say the CID boys were going to get here?
I don't think they're going to be able to get out tonight, sir.
Oh, really? Well, you can tell them to get off their arses and get down here, or my solicitor will be waking up Superintendent Mullet first thing tomorrow morning. And the next time I see him on the golf course, I might mention you as well.
Sir?
The officer clenches his jaw. The street is quiet outside Frost's house. A bike wheels up over the road. It stops as a car passes. The bike cycles over to Frost's house. It heads up the short driveway beside the car. Inside, Frost is asleep in front of the TV. His head lolls to one side. Outside the RSPCA centre, a dark blue car drives slowly by. It stops past the centre. Lizowski pulls his hood over his head, looks around, and reverses towards the centre. He glances around again, checks his watch, then grabs a red plastic petrol can from the passenger seat. He marches up to the building carrying it. Inside, Christine heads down to the kennels. Christine goes up to the barking, jumping dog's kennel.
What's the matter with you? You're keeping everyone awake. Hey, have some biscuits. Go on, let's go.
Lizowski stuffs a long cream rag through the letterbox until it reaches the floor inside. He pours petrol from the red can onto the rag. Inside.
Good boy. Go on. Shh. Here, come on. Now you sleep tight, okay? See you tomorrow.
George arrives at the Berlins. Berland opens the door before George can ring the bell.
Ah, Georgie. I didn't know you worked without the organ grinder winding the handle. On in here.
George is stony-faced. Outside the centre, Lizowski flicks a lighter and sets fire to the rag. The flames quickly spread along the rag through the letterbox and onto the carpet inside. Lizowski hurries away. Christine makes her way along the kennels.
Here's my favourite girls. Come on, then.
She comes out of the kennels into a corridor. She shuts the door behind her and hesitates, frowning. She walks down the corridor, peering around a corner. She opens the door to reception and gawps at the fire and the smoke. The fire rages. Beams start falling from the ceiling. Christine runs back to the kennels, slamming the reception door shut behind her. She opens the kennel doors and ushers the dogs out.
Come, Sally, out you come. There you go. Come on, Ned. Come on, Butch. Come on. Here you go.
At home, the ringing wakes Frost, who's still in his armchair.
Frost.
Jack, there's a report of a fire at the RSPCA centre.
I'm on my way there now.
Black smoke begins to fill the kennel corridor. Christine covers her mouth as she hurries to open one more kennel. The dog leaps at the door.
Come here, then. Out there, sick boy. Out. Go out.
Christine follows the dog to the corridor. A huge explosion knocks Christine to the floor. Frost rushes out of his house and freezes. On his car in red paint are the words, "You die next." ITFC audio description.